And welcome back to Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you. The beloved Dr. Maya Angelou joins us now. She's considered one of the most renowned and influential voices of our time, a civil rights activist, a distinguished professor, an award-winning poet and author. She's won the Literarian Award and a Grammy, among many others. She's won the Presidential Medal of Freedom and holds 30 honorary degrees. Dr. Angelou joins us from her home in North Carolina. Welcome, doctor, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so very much.
It's truly our great privilege to have you with us today.
Well, I know you also have the great privilege of having weather in the 70s or 80s.
That we do.
That's good for you.
Well, doctor, here we are 50 years after Dr. King's March on Washington. How do you feel that we've progressed as a nation?
Ms. Berman, you know, progress is a gradual thing. It's like evolution. We are evolving. We are becoming better. It's just that we live such short and brief and scattered lives like a scat jazz singer. But so we don't get to see as much change. It's so gradual. But, you know, if you think back, since I've been alive, it was possible to lynch a black man on the street corner and not do a day for it. You understand?
Yes, of course.
You have to look at, especially when you grow older, you have to look at the gradual changes and be grateful for them so that you can work still to make more change.
So you'll be sharing your thoughts about race relations this Thursday evening at Congregation B'nai Israel in Boca Raton.
A little of that. I might decide to speak about the art of bicycle riding.
Okay, well, we can do that too.
Making a good apple pie.
How would you, though, describe the current state of civil rights and race relations in American society and worldwide, for that matter?
Ms. Berman, it's still iffy. It's still, there's hate is so, in so many hearts. They're just hate because the parents, a woman told me, my daddy never liked you people. But what had I done to her that she would say that to me in a public place? Just because she was white and I was black. So, no, there's a lot of ignorance. It's still, people can be afraid of those things and folks they don't understand. So, I'm sorry to say that it's not as good as it will be in 10 years. It'll be better in 10 years. Even 10 years ago, would you believe we'd have had a black president?
No.
So, here we are. We are getting better. It's better and better. We're growing up a bit. Okay.
Would you tell us what it was like working with the two men and friends with the two men who shaped history and race relations in the world, Dr. King and Nelson Mandela? How did that influence your life?
And Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. I learned so much. With Mr. Mandela, I met him when I lived in Egypt. I was a journalist. And he came because he was head of the ANC, the African National Congress. All of his people were there, and the other group, which was a rival organization, my husband was head of that. And
what was that?
That was a PAC, Pan-African Congress. It was a little more of an activist organization than the ANC. And so I had heard them, the men, arguing at the tops of their voices just since I'd been in Egypt, since I'd met the South Africans, my husband's friends. But when Mr. Mandela came, he never raised his voice. Never. And you know he felt as committed to his side as the others did. Mm-hmm. I just saw that kindness. I also noted that Mr. Mandela would actually compliment my cook on her shoes on her apron. That's not usual. But he made everybody feel at ease. That was blacks, whites, Boers, Afrikaans, Xhosa, Zulu. Just wonderful.
It sounds like he also made everybody feel important.
That's right. Now, do you have that poem, the Mandela tribute?
Not in front of me, I don't know.
No, I just wondered if you had it, if you were going to. I just wondered, had you read it?
Oh, I definitely read it.
Oh, thank you.
You know, speaking of your writing, in your book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, you write of your childhood in Stamps, Arkansas, and the values instilled in you by your grandma. How did your childhood shape this journey of yours? Can you tell us?
You're not asking me that question. You can ask me, but then do you have 2 or 3 hours where we just...
Well, let me ask you this then. Can you describe at all for us what it is about you that provides you with this ability to influence the world on such a monumental scale, which you do, for all generations?
Well, I'm aware that I have been so blessed. I'm aware that I've been brought from the muck and the mire to stand with kings and queens and presidents. Yes, I have been brought. So I'm grateful. I continue to have an attitude of gratitude. So when people come up, I know that if I'm with human beings, I'll be all right. Even the bad ones, I'll be all right. I don't know what it would be like to be in a company of zebras or fleas or something, but I know a human being. And there's a statement by Terence. He says, "Homo sum." I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me. And when you look in the encyclopedia for Terence with one R, you see that line in Latin, and this and the number of date, the date rather, is Terence was an African. He was in the italics, it says Terentius Afer. He was an African freed by that senator who owned him, and he became the most popular playwright in Rome. That statement five plays have come to us from 154 B.C. So I have no argument with everybody. Bitterness is dangerous. It's like cancer. It eats upon the host. So I don't have that. I can be angry at a cruelty to anybody, but I'm not going to spend any of my time being bitter.
No, it sounds like your heart is filled with love.
Thank you.
I was thinking your career has spanned so many passions, so many years, so many different domains. You've given so much of yourself. What would you like to still accomplish?
Oh, I'd like more love in the world, more courage to love each other. Not. I don't mean a lot of sentimentality and romance, and I don't mean that. I meant real love. I'd like to see it.
Tell us more. Tell us more about real love. What does that look like? What would that look like to you?
Well, it would mean that when we see a child who is hungry, if the child looks like us, we give him some food. But if he doesn't, we give him some food. And we try to find out, does he have shoes? And the fact that he speaks a different language or eats food prepared differently should not make a bit of difference to me when I see a child. There's a a song. I've just been writing it with Valerie Simpson. Valerie and her husband were the couple who wrote almost everything. Ain't No Mountain High Enough, and Reach Out and Touch Somebody's Hand. I have so many of those. I saw two young people sitting on the street in London, and a man passed by them and spat on them. Hmm. These are two young white people, probably about, maybe 20 years old. The man who spat on them looked more like them than they looked like me, but I knew that that was the wrong. You shouldn't, this is somebody's children. And if nobody's there to claim them, I claim them. So I'm not a cursing person, but I went to that man and I caught him by his jacket and I just used my finger and poked him in the chest. Now, I don't curse, so so I made got him. I said, you knock-kneed, slew-footed Texas, southern-eating, southern. I don't know what I said.
Well, you got his attention.
I did, and the children got their and backpacks and their little dog and their guitars and continued walking down the street. So I never knew if they were Welsh or Swedish or could have been Russian. I don't know. But I wrote a song. So the lyric is, when you see him on the highway hitching rides with his dogs and his guitar by his side, you need to ask, what's all the lying and the dying and the killing and the thrilling all about? Take time out. When you see him with a band around his head and an army surplus bunk that makes his bed, you need to ask, what's all the bleeding and the kneading and the beating and the cheating all about? Take time out. Now, you can sell your soul for money, then run off to the country for your cookouts and your parties on the lawns, while our children seek sedation in Eastern meditation or visions that go shooting up their arms. Feel some sorrow for the folks who thought tomorrow was a place that they could call up on the phone. Take a month and show some kindness for the folks who thought that blindness was an illness that affected eyes alone. Well, anyway, I finished the poem, and Miss Simpson is writing the music, and I'm longing for it.
I feel so privileged to have been able to hear that.
Thank you.
Dr. Maya Angelou, thank you so much for spending your time with us today. It's been an honor, and we wish you all continued success and the very, very best, and I hope to see you next Thursday.
Thank you. Please come back. I hope to come and see me.
Okay.
Take hands.
Please take care.
And thank you in the same. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Dr. Angelou will speak on race relations at Congregation B'nai Israel on Yamato Road in Boca Raton this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. as part of their speaker series. The evening commemorates the 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's March on Washington. It also commemorates the 30th anniversary of an interfaith relationship between Congregation B'nai Israel and Ebenezer Missionary Baptist Church of Boca Raton. More information on the event is available at cbiboca.org. That's cbiboca.org, and 561-241-8118. That's 561-241-8118. And we'll have links on our website at wlrn.org and on our Facebook page at facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Thank you so much for joining us.